Today we're talking with Teresa Nemeshani. Teresa, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's early in the morning. It's cold. I'm in Chicago.
It's cold in New York too, David.
What do you do, Teresa?
So I obviously work for Microsoft. I run what we do with startups in New York. I sit in developer evangelism, but I am a business person. And I'm a recovering entrepreneur.
You used to be an entrepreneur.
I have been an entrepreneur. It could happen again. I like to think that on behalf of Microsoft and inside of Microsoft, I'm an entrepreneur as well. I'm all about creating stuff.
So when you say you were an entrepreneur, you used to have your own startups, and now you help other people that have their startups. Is that correct?
That's right. So yeah, I've had my own startups. I've also worked for other people's startups. I started my career right after college, and this was a very long time ago, like over 20 years ago, I'll admit, as the first employee of a startup that actually launched the first commercial television network in Eastern Europe, and we actually IPO'd. So I had a very, very lucky start. It was an incredible team, really groundbreaking stuff, and I caught the bug and never let go.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to East. I'm going to Romania, not real far east, but I'm going there in May.
Excellent. I've been there.
I'll watch some television while I'm there.
Yeah, our holding company wound up launching a bunch more stations throughout the region, including Romania. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, what is your job now? What do you do for startups?
So I am territorially focused on the New York City ecosystem, which is a super exciting place to be right now, but I always have my finger on the pulse of cool stuff happening elsewhere. And I am constantly on the lookout for the next big thing and getting to know those entrepreneurs, getting to know their teams, understanding what's going to help them get from being a small little company to something that's really huge. And I'm trying to pick winners in the sense that I'm personally looking for ones that could really go further and faster with the help of Microsoft. So I'm looking for ways that maybe our technology could have a hook through the cloud or through some sort of client platform. And by doing so, they could do something that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. I also, for a small subset of them, really advocate internally to help them use some of the assets that are unique to Microsoft, you know, that we have. So they might be access to customers, access to distribution networks. It really depends on what the startup is and what's going to get them from little to huge.
Are these mostly tech startups or does it matter?
For me, they will be tech startups. They may be So interesting, you know, I sit in New York, right? And it's a very different ecosystem from, let's say, Silicon Valley, where tech startups are tech-led and tech-driven.
Right.
In the New York ecosystem, they tend to be business-led and business-driven, but highly tech-enabled. So it's a little bit different, and that's part of what I need to, navigate through. So sometimes they are tech-led. There's always a big piece of technology. I mean, in terms of my engagement from Microsoft, it's going to be, there's going to be a strong technical hook. And if there's not, there's a limit to what I personally can do. But I have a strong, professional network as well. And sometimes I'll provide introductions to investors or to other people sort of off my broader Rolodex and outside of Microsoft and not just inside of Microsoft.
So when you find the next big thing, tell me about some of the things that Microsoft can do for them.
Cool. So for starters, you know, we have an excellent program that many of you probably know about. And if you don't, you should. It's called BizSpark. And BizSpark is, while it's kind of an entry-level program and lots of startups are on it, at last count, I think it's about 50,000 globally. What it is it's basically a whole lot of free stuff, free software, 3 years of access to Microsoft Developer Network, a bunch of free cloud. You know, a team can really get in there and put a lot of that to work in building their prototype and ultimately building their business. It also provides them access to real humans they can talk to. and access to a lot of information about how they can do what they want to do. So, so that's BizSpark, and I, you know, onboard new startups to BizSpark many times a day, you know, every day, as do many of my colleagues. So actually, you know, quick plug on that, Microsoft.com/BizSpark, you know, any startup can apply. And I would implore them to, there's sort of no cost to it and no reason, you know, why not?
Yeah, not sort of. There is no cost to it.
there's literally no cost to it. It's like a minute, you know, like fill out the form.
I guess the time costs is something.
Yeah, barely. You know, you could do it on your phone and you're done.
Who qualifies for BizSpark? Just can anybody get it, or is there some bar?
It's not quite a bar. They're more like parameters, such that they have to be less than 5 years old. They need to be privately held, less than $1 million in revenue.
Okay.
Outside of that, you know, and they need to be they need to build software. Like, they need to be a startup.
Okay, you know. So if you're selling life insurance, it's not for you. That's the.
Well, if they're building a product, you know, it can finesse a little bit.
Okay.
Sometimes I have some agencies that are also incubating a product, and so sometimes I need to kind of figure out how to thread the needle so that it's viewed as their product. You know.
Okay.
Now there is a higher level of BizSpark, and things really start. You know, okay, a lot of startups will sign up for BizSpark. A lot will use stuff that's in there. And by the way, it doesn't force you to use Microsoft technology exclusively, like, by any stretch. So a lot of the tools are interoperable with lots of the open source software that startup developers in particular use, like, all the time. So that's one thing that people need to I always need to, you know, repeat that and understand that we are, you know, completely a new and very exciting Microsoft, and that needs to be, you know, known. Now, things really start getting exciting if a startup really starts using various stuff and we're in touch and we're starting to see a growth path. And, you know, I'm kind of looking for patterns where, okay, you know, there was an idea. Well, guess what? They shipped live code. They shipped a product. Or, oh, guess what? You know, they're starting to get some real cloud usage. Like, something's going on here. They're having some success. That merits a follow-up conversation, because there might be more we can do, right? There's a program, sort of a top-tier elite program within BizSpark called BizSpark Plus. And in that is a pretty fantastic offer for up to $60,000 of free cloud. It's a $5,000 a month credit. It doesn't roll over. There's a little bit of fine print, but, you know, bottom line is, for startups that we select into that program, it can really help their investment dollars go further, so that they can get a lot done. It's a fantastic program. So this also helps us shine a light on, you know, who's really starting to pop, and as they do that, then people like me and other folks can start, you know, paying attention to just give a little bit, you know, of extra help. You know, let's remember, 90% of startups won't make it.
Right.
So, you know, a part of my job is to give them what they need, and then kind of, sort of like children, you know, send them out to kind of like do their thing, and you love each of them, you know, and you wish they all come back. A lot of them don't, but the ones that do, you start seeing those patterns, and then you really, when you start seeing that performance, you really want to help them further.
Outstanding. Yeah. I noticed that you know, International Women's Day is coming up, and you're a woman. Yes. There a lot of are you seeing a lot of female startups, more so than when you were an entrepreneur?
You know, it's hard to quantify. You know, being a woman, I always, women entrepreneurs always come to me, and I always, you know, notice them in the room and try to lend a hand. So I can't quantify it. But
certainly in the tech world, there are fewer women than there are men.
No question about it. Yeah, so I thought your question was more about, like, the trending versus the absolute number. But, Yeah. So first of all, super excited about International Women's Day. I am a third generation working mom. I'm a mother of two daughters and, you know, and a long time, you know, woman in business. So, so celebrating the great things that women do, and particularly in tech is in any kind of innovation, actually, is something that I actually obsess about. It is a very exciting time to be a woman entrepreneur, and it's a unique one because there's with social media and with mobile and with new technologies that have been put in front of us, the dialogue around what it means to be a woman entrepreneur and how we play in the broader world is richer than it's ever been. We are connecting with each other and having conversations and insight that we have never had before. So, you know, I don't, you've probably observed, you know, yourself that like just, there's just a lot more dialogue in general, both in the broader culture, as well as in sort of business and then in tech, in terms of awareness about the, about what women are doing and, and where we're not seeing women, you know, quite frankly, and then asking questions about, well, how could we see more and stuff like that. So, that was a really long answer, but you know, I'll land it, you know, this way, which is that, and actually New York is an interesting place because a lot of the women in tech movement comes from here. You know, as a metro area, we are chock full of incredibly talented women who don't take no for an answer. We're New Yorkers, right? You know, that's like DNA. A lot of the women are not technical per se, you know. So when I'm looking for specific technical engagement, the decision maker who's the woman who I would naturally engage with because I'm also a woman may not, oftentimes is not also the technical decision maker.
Okay.
She may have a partner, and I'm making like broad sweeping generalizations here, but that's kind of the pattern, you know, that I see. So it will be a woman who's like a crackerjack business person or project manager or a hacker of some kind, meaning a growth hacker or something like that, and is in a self-taught way learning, you know, how to, and in a very scrappy way, pulling in new tools that are coming to the fore, the solutions of which are always technical by you know, in terms of what they are. But she's going to often, you know, most often need to build a team and draw on a team who are going to put that stuff into place. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. What other kind of advice do you give women who are entrepreneurs in the tech space?
So I say don't hesitate. You know, she who is early does better than she who is late. Don't seek perfection. Ship it. Like, figure out a way to get something into market or something into users' hands. No product survives contact with the end user, like, ever.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can think as hard as you want about, you know, about the product design and how it's going to be used in the hands of the user, but until it's actually in their hands, you don't know what the reality is about how the user is going to respond to it. Do you know what
they'll
I mean?
Sure.
Yeah, we operate on a lot of
ways you haven't. They'll use it in ways you haven't thought of before while you were designing it.
Yeah, or they just won't use it. Like, they may tune out completely because of something that you didn't think was consequential.
Right.
And that's tough. You know, if you just spent weeks and weeks building something and then it, like, goes down like a lead balloon, you know, that's a, you know, dagger in your gut. So if you can scope things really small, you know, the lean startup concept where, you know, scope something small, in sort of a tight prototype way, stick it in front of users and just see if that part works and then expand it a little bit more, build that, put it in front of them, see if that works. That sort of rapid cycling is really where things are. You know, it's indicative of the move from waterfall to agile in the, you know, in the developer
fast
world.
Fast feedback. Fail fast.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's good advice for anybody. Are there problems that are particular to women that that you think men don't see in the startup space?
Well, so I'm someone who's raised funding and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I've definitely pounded the pavement, been through the cycle. I'll start off by saying that being an entrepreneur all up is hard.
Sure.
Whether you're a woman or a man, white or black, gay, straight, whatever, it is hard. Okay, so I don't want to say that it's like easy for the white guys, because that's not, you know, like, that's not the
sure.
case. However, it's known, you know, and documented and really, you know, indisputable that, so let's presume that you're building a business and you need to raise outside capital in order to do that. Now, first of all, I will say that even in that scenario, you know, that there's a lot of focus and heat around that kind of scenario, because that's where like the news, that's where you hear about the big, you know, the Ubers and the Facebooks and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and they're raising big amounts of capital. It's very, the press love those. You see those stories all the time, and that's what makes you think of, that's sort of what creates the pattern of what a successful startup is. It's a little bit distortive. However, I actually really like good, solid businesses that make actual money, you know, and if they could do that without taking outside capital, which is one of the things I tell entrepreneurs about BizSpark, like, if we can, like, help you, you know, with your own money, keep your equity, keep control of your company,
sure.
To turn it into, like, a wealth creation machine, then that is awesome. Then I've actually, like, done my job. But the fact of the matter is, you know, wealth in our country and job creation and whatnot is, kind of made by unicorns. The wild, like the wild successes, or certainly that's where, much of the attention happens, and that's going to need venture capital. And when you're talking about the venture capital game, or OPM, which is other people's money, there is a whole, system and whatnot. And unfortunately, women and people in other underrepresented groups tend to under-index in terms of getting through those processes successfully. Okay.
So they tend to be less successful at getting venture capital, you're saying?
Getting the money, and when they get it, they get less of it, and when they also get it, the terms are worse. They're more diluted.
Interesting.
Their company.
So the challenge is they'll have to do more with less in general terms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are studies, you know, that will say that women are more capital efficient and all of this kind of stuff. And I think that that's, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So, for example, venture capitalists are over, I don't have the numbers like right in front of me, but, you know, venture capital, like I think like 7% of venture capitalists or something like that are female. It's a very low number. And then that perpetuates because, you know, especially in the early stage investment game, you don't have a lot of data. And so pattern matching, meaning, okay, well, that thing was successful. So people that look and smell like the ones who did them are probably, that's where I feel comfortable, you know.
Right.
And it's a very gut-driven kind of game. So it's a natural instinct for investors. And by the way, like, well, if they're angel investors, it's their own money. If they're venture capitalists, they have raised money in order to make the investment. But they're when the gut is driving it, you're going to do what like feels good, you know, what feels right. And gender can absolutely, we just see that women tend not to make it as much through the screen. So it's a very interesting challenge. Part of it is we are seeing more and more. We're seeing some women investors kind of step in and step up. That's great to see.
I agree.
I think also it's important. I'm personally looking for women entrepreneurs who I deeply respect women as a market, like, you know, people who build businesses that are serving women as a market. I mean, you know, like the 51% minority, that kind of thing. There's a lot of money to be made there. But I really have a soft spot for women entrepreneurs who are building platforms and, you know, solutions that are for more than women, that are actually like super universal, because I think that that's where then they tend that, you know, they're less likely to be siloed as like women businesses. Do you know
sure.
what I mean?
Yeah. They just happen to be owned by a woman. They're not necessarily a women business.
Exactly. So, I mean, I wouldn't work with those exclusively by any means. I mean, I wouldn't be able to fill my day if I did, but I really like those when I see it, because I think that they help everybody paint a different future. So, so if anyone's watching this and you're one of those, you know, tweet me and we'll talk.
Tweet you where?
Okay, my Twitter handle is at Tereza N, TereZaN.
I heard you're writing an article.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I see, you know, entrepreneurs every day, and I'm always like looking for really cool areas where great stuff is popping. And then in parallel, I'm always looking for great, you know, women entrepreneurs. So here's the thing. The places where I'm looking right now, I'm not seeing enough women. So the piece that I'm pulling together, and it's, you know, perhaps kind of fun, but I think that there's really something there, is top five places I really want to see women build businesses. Do you want to know what they are?
I do, very much.
That's my teaser. So, big data and machine learning.
Okay.
There's so much going on there.
True.
Number two, VR, virtual reality. There are worlds to be created, and women need to be part of that thinking. I've seen some, but not enough. Yeah, I need a lot more. Number three, 3D printing. Did you know that the CEO of MakerBot is a woman?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Jenny Lawton. She is a rock star. So that's a whole ecosystem of both, you know, end state products and also picks and axes, you know, supportive platform technology. We've got to have women in the DNA of that. A fourth area that I'm at the beginning of learning about, and I know there aren't enough women, cryptocurrency, you know, Bitcoin and all of that stuff. Again, whole ecosystem being built out, and it is so important for people to be in early. And finally, five, which is like my favorite, my baby, is called biofabrication. So
what's that?
I'm sure you have no idea what that is. That's because it's really early. So biofabrication is leveraging cells to manufacture outputs that you would, you know, employ in consumer products. And why does it matter to technology? Because this is now becoming available to us because of cloud computing, reprogramming DNA, and then ultimately down the line, as these technologies you know, come to the fore, we're talking about scalability of manufacture. So I actually ran a conference or sponsored a conference in December called the Biofabricate Summit, where a woman by the name of Suzanne Lee is a thought leader in this, and she pulled together deep scientists and designers, artists, startups who are doing things like growing sustainable bricks out of a mushroom material called mycelium. There were people who are growing leather, like growing leather.
Very cool.
So you don't have to raise cows, kill cows, all that kind of stuff. Biofabrication. I want to see women there. So those are my five.
That is pretty exciting. You know, actually, my undergraduate degree was in biochemistry, so I want to read this article. Where can I read it?
It's going to be in Inc.
Inc. Magazine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll
do you know?
The link. I have to finish writing it, but I told them I'd submit it.
What's your deadline?
Tuesday. It's been somewhat open, but I need to have it out for International Women's Day, too. So
that's coming up.
So it's on its way. But, yeah.
Excellent. And we're about to wrap up here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in case the next big thing is watching right now?
The next big thing. Find the smartest people you can just get to know. Become friends with them. If you become friends with the people that are doing the most interesting stuff, then you're probably also going to be doing super interesting stuff. So it can be really hard to know what you should do, you know, and what's the right answer and whatnot. Get yourself into the right, you know, kind of ecosystem and positive place where people are doing super cool stuff. I was going to say a bad word. And I have just seen again and again that the good stuff follows. So find your ecosystem, find your peeps, and double down. And sign up for BizSpark so we can help you, because we want you to succeed.
Definitely. Teresa, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much, David.
All right. And this has been another episode of Dev Radio. Thanks for watching.